Welcome to the City Current Radio Show, focused on sharing and powering the good in our community. The show takes an in-depth look at the heartbeat of the Mid-South, the organizations and individuals leading by example to fuel change and how we can make a difference. Now here's your host, City Current CEO, Jeremy Park.
Welcome to the City Current Radio Show. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. We're always honored to bring you stories of individuals and organizations that are making a difference, powering the good in our community. We're going to kick it off talking about Next Memphis, which is a part of Porter Leith. We are joined by Chloe Moore. She is the director of Next Memphis. How are you doing, Chloe?
I am doing great.
Give us a little background. When you're out there talking about Next Memphis related to Porter Leith, how do you elaborate and illustrate that context?
One of the strengths of Next Memphis is that it is hosted by Porter Leith. So Porter Leith is a child and family services agency in Shelby County that's been serving here since 1850. It started off as an orphanage, and as the community has evolved, its programming has really, again, kept up with that evolution to meet community needs as they are most presented. So again, started off as an orphanage and has evolved to host now nine different programs and initiatives that or eight different programs and initiatives with a few on the horizon that really seek to establish how we best serve children and families in a way that empowers them to achieve healthy, optimal, and independent lifestyles. So examples of that are Porter Leith has been running a preschool program for the past 20 years. We are the Head Start grantee and early Head Start grantee for Shelby County and have a serious focus on making sure that every child gets the best top quality education and start to life equally across the board. We also have programs that focus on what does it look like to be a parent and what does it look like to have a partner in that. We have programs that support grandparents. We call them foster grandparents and say, you know, how do we make sure that the elderly in our community are given chances to share their wisdom with little ones and also getting like a stipend for their efforts. So I could go on and on about Porter Leith, but our website shows really the breakdown of programs. And I always have to share this, that whenever I talk about this organization, I have to talk about the people who run it and the people who are like fueling the work. And I would just say that I've been so fortunate to work on this team. I actually consulted alongside them for about 2 years and then joined the team in the third year of this project. So it's been an honor to see how much accountability matters, how much Memphis is the center of everything we do, and how community truly comes first. And it's been really humbling to work with a team that puts people in the center the way they say they do and actually do behind the scenes.
I always use Porter Leith as an example. If you want to make a difference, go and volunteer in like the early Head Start Head Start programs, because the kids are amazing. They are bright-eyed, huge smile, just really amazing kids. And it shows you just a little bit of time of going in there and spending time with them, whether it's to read, to play games, to do musicals. There's so many things you can do, but you get to see the real power and potential of what the youth hold for our community. And I think it is one of those where as an organization, you make it extremely easy to volunteer and to give back and to be a part of the good. But at the same time, by immersing yourself, you get to see just this powerful potential. So I really do hold Porter Leith up as a perfect example of just how to get involved in the potential of that. Carry that over, because as you mentioned, Porter Leith as an organization has been pouring into youth for a long time. Yeah. And so now this is a really new, exciting way to do even more, to dive in even deeper, and to share resources really across the board that can be a catalyst for greater change. So talk about Next Memphis.
So thank you for that segue into it, because I think it works perfectly. And before I talk about the programmatic elements of Next Memphis, I talk about the why. And really, I start with child development. So just for folks who don't know, in terms of child development, all of our brains develop like 90% of its mass by age 6, and 80% of that brain development actually happens by age 3. And what that means is, in child development and honestly human development, that the type of infrastructure your brain has or the neural connections it can make, so much of that is built, again, by the time that folks are 6 years old. And that really is the foundation for establishing how much children can learn and how much they can take in. So for example, if you introduce a child to nurturing and learning environments that are rich in positive relationships and a bunch of words that they can hear, the amount of information they can take in life is limitless. But we've seen for children who are not given those types of environments, those types of supports, the ways that their brain develops is just significantly set back. So you imagine just like a building with much less scaffolding. So what they can take in, again, is significantly diminished, and it's really hard for children to catch up. So you see this in kindergarten readiness. You see that even as kids are showing up to kindergarten, which is where we typically have been told that school starts, you see a disparity in how children are showing up. So in Shelby County, right now, 41% of children are showing up ready for kindergarten. And that translates into 24% of children reading on grade level by the time they get to third grade. All of this from prenatal through 8 years old significantly matters because of that indicator in third grade. So what happens is, from a literacy perspective, in third grade, children switch from learning how to read to using reading to learn. And that seriously matters because using reading is actually the basis of how education works in our country, how, you know, any kind of engagement, whether it's political, social, spiritual, so much of it depends on literacy. And for children who don't make that switch in third grade, it is really hard for them to catch up later down the road, if they ever do catch up. And for that reason, third grade reading is the biggest predictor educationally of adult poverty risk. So when you think about work that's happening in the community, early childhood education is one of those that seriously prepares the next generation of children to be the leaders in our community, and honestly, just for the well-being of our community. So that's the context that Next Memphis was created in, specifically thinking through children. And when you just talk about adults, you know, in the last U.S. labor report, 70% of women who are not in the workforce cited childcare as the number one reason that they weren't able to go to work. So this is not just about, you know, preparing the children of our future and giving them the best start to life, but honestly, right now, there are serious workforce challenges because people do not have childcare, and it's been only exacerbated by coronavirus and the financial impact that's had on families.
There's a lot of layers to this. There's the workforce development side and enabling the parents to be productive and have their careers going. And then there's the foundational elements of making sure that the children have every advantage possible. And that also includes not only the educational pieces, but the nutrition and the development, like everything going together. And so when you look at that in a holistic environment, walk us through the programmatic pieces.
So our program theory of change states that if you have a viable business, you have high quality instruction in the classroom, and then comprehensive supports for families, then those three pillars create a high quality early childhood education experience for everyone involved, from the children, teachers, directors, owners, caregivers, you name it. And for us, what we're really looking at doing is changing the business model and also the program quality standards for early childhood education. So it is a program for certain, but it's aiming at structural change. So I can get into all kinds of detail, and maybe we will later, about how the business model of early care and education is broken. And that's also a key part of why we include business supports as well. So what that looks like is, basically, in the business world, folks are very familiar with outsourcing, right? And for the early childhood education space, a lot of times people don't remember that childcare services are businesses too. So we're treating all of this as a very passionate business. So in building a viable business, what we're saying is, look, childcare directors usually have to wear 80 hats and then some just to keep their center going day to day. I remember during the design phase, I worked with a director who told me, you know, I got into this for children, but it's 3 p.m. before I get out of my office because of so much administrative work. So responding to that type of call, we said, okay, let's take all of the non-essential functions that might be administrative or bureaucratic or supporting the business that we can either automate or provide services for in terms of direct staff that can take this off the plates of childcare directors and owners so they can focus in on children, parents, and teachers. So in the business space, that looks like we have an HR team, we have a marketing team that supports with both enrollment and just getting the program's name out there. We've handled back office, so that's around the financial portions in terms specifically thinking through accounting. And have services that also support the infrastructure of the center. So we have a full service maintenance team, and those come together as a package to support the business functionings of each center.
I think that's an important thing for listeners to understand is you're building a more efficient system that can scale and do all of that with proficiency versus the centers themselves having to necessarily do everything on an island by themselves.
And an example I love to use, efficiency is the perfect word. So let's say, for example, in the early childhood education industry, you have accounting costs, right? So you have 10 childcare centers who are paying an accountant $60,000 for their services, which rarely happens, but let's just say that's where you're at. That would cost in accounting services and fees $600,000 to serve 10 centers. Next Memphis's logic is, okay, let's hire one accountant at $60,000 to serve 10 centers, and now costs across the industry is $60,000 for accounting services. Does that make sense? So that's really the rationale behind, you know, outsourcing and centralizing these kinds of services. So then in the programming space around what happens in the classroom, we are looking at how do you recreate Head Start level quality without having the Head Start grant. Right? So we have found great success with our teaching model and coaching model that is in partnership with our early childhood services division and our teacher excellence program. So that those two folks, it's two staff members per classroom, and it's going to be an instructional coach and an education specialist. They work together to provide on-site and off-site professional development that focuses on all the elements of early childhood development, the regulations required by licensing agencies, whether it be the Department of Human Services or Department of Education. We also pay for a high quality curriculum for centers who don't already have one that they can demonstrate to us, like the outcomes, and then provide an addition data tracking and monitoring through our performance and quality improvement team so that you can really see the arc of a child's learning and the progress a teacher is making in real time. So all of those come together to, again, create high quality best practices in the classroom. We provide all of the resources so that cost or access to materials is not a barrier for partner programs, and then focus in on, okay, how do we keep pushing the bar forward of improving what's happening in terms of practice?
Give me maybe one or two, because there's so many things I think you could grade success on, because there's so many different touch points and areas, but give me maybe one or two big ones that you're looking at that are really exciting for you in terms of creating this sort of change. So what are some of the things you're looking at that you say, these are the indicators that we're really focused on that will create very positive change?
The big two buckets in my head, honestly, they're probably big three, but there's one that's becoming much more recognized as important, which is social emotional learning. And the best way I describe that is just thinking through how you regulate your emotions, right? Because we can focus so much on the technical ABCs and your 1-2-3s, but if a child doesn't know how to self-soothe, they can't stay in a classroom when they're agitated, right? And being out of the classroom loses so much learning time, right? Or they might disrupt the entire classroom because they really need some attention, and that disrupts everyone's learning. So that's one. Another field that is coming up that I think, again, it's new or more nascent, but it's incredibly important, is infant mental health. You know, we don't realize that infants also need their mental health taken care of and their well-being taken care of, but it truly matters in terms of how they develop in a healthy way. And then I would also say literacy is huge, right? So it starts, again, as soon as the child's born, even when they're prenatal, there are things that folks can do to establish reading practices and start getting the child to hear more words, because that in itself is incredibly important to having like a rich vocabulary or being able to recognize words, or even being able, from an auditory perspective and a visual perspective. So those are three areas that, you know, we really focus on.
How can the community help? I think one, just obviously awareness is important to know what you're doing, but talk about the ways we can help support your efforts.
Of course. I would say first is education. So I think, again, early childhood education is in itself still new to a lot of people. So, and to be quite honest with you, before I started working in this space, I had no idea of all of the importance of early education, how much it mattered from a community development standpoint, and also just really helping to alleviate poverty as one of the key strategies to do so. So educating yourselves or following along the work of folks who are doing this, I think, is important. We also need advocates from a public policy standpoint to help the state figure out the best way that it can invest in initiatives like ours. So for example, we found during the research that there's basically something called a childcare certificate, and or it's basically subsidized childcare provided by the state. The state was setting its reimbursement rates by what childcare directors were charging, right? So they assumed that that was market cost, but the childcare industry itself was only charging what they'd be reimbursed for. And so it was this cycle of chronic underpayment because there wasn't rigorous analysis on what it actually costs. So we have a lot of public policy work to be doing and need as many advocates as possible.
And then last question is the easy one is, how do we get involved in terms of going to the website, social media, following the conversations, raising our hand to say we want to be a part of it? Where would you direct everyone to go?
Yep, I would say look at the website. We're currently redoing it too, which is great. So I would say go there, go to porterleaf.com and really reach out to see how you can volunteer.
Well, Chloe, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for all you do. Greatly appreciate it.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Lipscomb & Pitts Insurance is proud to power the City Current Radio Show. Our mission at Lipscomb & Pitts Insurance is to protect your business, employees, and family while enriching and impacting our community. As the Mid-South's largest privately held insurance agency, Lipscomb & Pitts worked with over 200 different insurance providers offering commercial, employee benefits, and personal insurance. If you're looking for a relationship based on performance, call 321-1000 or visit lpinsurance.com.